Good morning. We'll start the Public Safety, Security Policy, and Finance Committee. We'll start with the roll call.
Johnson.
Here.
Lomer.
Here.
Hillstrom.
Here.
Becker Finn.
Here.
Considine.
Here.
Dean.
Here.
Frankie.
Here.
Grossel.
Here.
Howe.
Present.
Lucero.
Here.
Neuberger. O'Neill.
I'm here.
Pinto.
Here.
Uglum.
Here.
Ward.
Here.
Zerwas.
Here. Representative Pinto, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from yesterday?
Yeah, I did, Mr. Chair, and I would move approval of them.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. At this time, we're going to bring up House File 2856 and refer to Ways and Means. Then we will, we have the DE amendment, and we will start with that. I will move the DE amendment.
The DE2.
The DE2 amendment. And at this time, we will take amendments to the DE2. First one is A18-0773. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to withdraw both the A18-773 and the A18-774 amendments.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Hillstrom withdraws the 773 and 774 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Neuberger.
Pardon me for the interruption, Mr. Chair, but did I miss, did we have to vote to approve the motion on the accepting the DE2? Do we need to do that?
We're not at this time. We are doing amendments to it before we adopt it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Next is the A2 amendment. Representative Howell.
Yeah. What a good one.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My mind was in a total different place at the present time. So what this amendment does is it includes the it basically does what we discussed in the committee is it requires the manufacturers and the installers of the interlock system to be to actually pay for the tow and the repair of the vehicle if their piece of equipment is default for the vehicle not working. So basically what it does is it puts the onus on the installer of the interlock system and makes sure if they're as reliable as they say they are, this shouldn't be a big cost to the installers, but it gives the people that have the interlock system in place some reliance that the installers are going to be standing behind the piece of equipment.
Representative Dean.
thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Howe. So just so I understand, if I'm required to have this installed, and for some reason other than my breathalyzer not allowing my car to start, for some reason that malfunctions and I cannot use my car, that means the towing and other expenses are covered by the interlock manufacturer and installer?
Representative Powell?
Are you saying that it's something other than the interlock system?
No, I'm saying if somehow the installation or the interlock system malfunctions, other than me not being able to activate because I've been drinking, that they then would be responsible for any tow charges or other type of charges that would come because of that.
Representative Howe?
That's correct, Representative Bean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Howe, for bringing this forward and closing that loop. And I know that was policy for at least one of the companies. There are several companies, and so I appreciate you bringing this forward, and I consider this a friendly amendment. Thank you so much.
All those in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. The next amendment will be the A10 amendment. I believe it's Representative Zerwad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A10 amendment is the critical infrastructure joint and several liability amendment. What we've seen in recent years is activism resulting in damage to critical infrastructure has become more and more common. Also growing to the number of entities who provide training funding for individuals to carry out those crimes. A simple Google search for Valve Turner opens a bottomless hole of videos, both celebrating this criminal phenomenon as well as teaching others how to vandalize critical infrastructure. The amendment, to be clear, does not create a new crime. It is already illegal to trespass and commit vandalism. Rather, this allows those parties with damages to attempt to recover their losses. Current Minnesota law provides penalties and the opportunity to pursue damages from individuals who trespass or damage critical infrastructure. The amendment provides for the opportunity to pursue joint and several liability damages against those entities or individuals who recruit, train, educate, or entice individuals to trespass or damage critical infrastructure. We are literally seeing recruitment efforts on the internet where they teach you how to drill holes through pipelines that are waiting to be installed, or to turn these valves and potentially create a catastrophic situation where the system either bursts or leaks. This bill in no way restricts or chills the right guaranteed in the First Amendment. In fact, the only outcome of this bill might be to hopefully having a chilling effect on these dangerous crimes, and one that I hope all members can support. And, Mr. Chair and members, it is my intention with the A-10 at this time to not offer the A-10 for a vote in this committee, but to bring it up at a later time. And so at this point, I'll withdraw the A-10, but knowing that we remain committed to having this a part of your final bill.
Thank you. The A-10 is withdrawn. Next will be the A-3 amendment. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. The A-3 amendment deals with administrative subpoenas and clarifying language on what is covered under an administrative subpoena as far as account or subscriber information. This was brought to me by an investigator connected with the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, who need a little bit more clarity in helping get subscriber information through administrative subpoenas. I spoke with the staff of the Civil Law Committee, and I spoke with the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. Unfortunately, the Minnesota County Attorneys Association hasn't had a full meeting since this language was brought to me, so they haven't been able, the full committee hasn't been able to fully endorse this language, but I have not heard any concerns on the language.
Representative Hilsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that it is clarifying language, and Representative Zerwas, if we do hear from someone that they have a concern with it, you're committed to working with us to ensure that we get it right, correct?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm trying to clear this, what I think is already clear, a portion of state statute up for some investigators with the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. At the end of the day, I want it right so that they can work on their investigations.
Thank you.
Thank you. All those in favor of the A3 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is approved. Next, we'll have the A4 amendment. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the A4 amendment simply deletes Section 9 on page 14 and renumbers. Members, this is the removal of the prejudgment interest rates language. We've had the debate about this proposal. I believe that this adding the language in incentivizes people to delay in payment. Members, we actually are seeing bills in other areas come forward with higher interest rates, not lower. For example, there's a storage facility interest rate that they're proposing for people who make late payments, and they want it to be $15 or 15%, whichever is higher. That's actually being carried by a Republican currently in the House. And so, members, we want people to be timely paid. We want cases to resolve, and I believe removing the language is the best way to do that, members. And I would encourage you to vote for the A4 amendment.
Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. The prejudgment interest rates in Minnesota are out of line with the rest of the country. The trend across the country over the last several years has been a decline in interest rates for these prejudgment interest rates. Kentucky just last year went from 12% to 6%. Montana just last year went from 10% to 7.5%. West Virginia just last year went from 7% down to 4.5%. What we're dealing with on this prejudgment interest rate is with a 10% interest rate, you are incentivizing someone that's suing, that's beginning litigation, to lengthen the process, to stretch out discovery. There is no incentive to cooperate and bring this forward. What this simply does is this follows national trends to lower the prejudgment interest rate to an interest rate, by the way, that several years ago we already changed for governments. And so we changed it to governments because a 10% interest rate when government is being sued is much too high, and it's burdensome, and it is just too difficult. And so this legislature lowered that interest rate for government. We're saying we should do that on the front end. And so a prejudgment interest rate of 4% post-judgment, the interest rate would remain at 10% to dissuade any idea that there's an incentive after a judgment not to pay. And that was the compromise language that that was developed several years ago. That's the language we're comfortable with in the bill. And Mr. Chair and representatives, I would encourage to vote no on the Hillstrom Amendment.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a final word. It's easy to compromise if you don't have all of the stakeholders in the room. I could even get agreement on firearms reform if I didn't have the NRA in the room. So imagine I don't necessarily consider the stakeholders deciding as a compromise when not everyone was present. So I'd ask members to vote in support of the A4 amendment.
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The amendment does not prevail. Next, we have the A5 amendment. Representative Hillstrom.
That's Becker Finn.
Okay. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so this amendment would remove the language on increasing the penalties for interfering or obstructing traffic, and remove the language that increases penalties for restricting access to transit. Clearly, we've fully debated this issue throughout the last year or so, but here it pops up again. In the omnibus bill, and my goal always in my role here is to do the just thing, and I don't believe that increasing penalties on those who feel compelled to publicly protest is the way to do that. If we continue to see protests, that should tell us that we have work to do to address the underlying injustices that lead people to protest in the first place. And so I think that if people feel heard and respected, that will have a more meaningful impact on some of these things that we see in our communities than increasing penalties. I fully believe that protest is the foundation of, you know, what makes us the United States, and I would encourage a yes vote on the A5 amendment.
Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I would encourage members to oppose the Becker-Finn Amendment. House Bill 390, the language relating to that, has passed off the floor of the House as a part of the omnibus bill in years past. The governor, in his recent statements, expressed public support for this bill, and so I think we should join the governor and keep this language in the bill.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to be clear, it's passed off the House floor and then not become law. And I believe, and maybe someone else knows, but I believe the governor's comments were related to Section 13 and not Section 14, you know, the difference between freeways and airports and transit vehicles. So I just want to make that clarification.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to reiterate that I don't believe that the governor has agreed with all sections of the original bill and all sections of this amendment. And, you know, the foundation of our country was based on protest, and there was damaged property. There were lots of things that happened that sort of our founding of our country, being white Europeans that settled this land, was that, you know, sometimes it's important to protest against the government because of things that are happening and things that are unjust. And, you know, I understand the concern that we have when individuals go to extreme measures, but to repeat what Representative Becker-Finn said, people aren't doing this just for fun. They're doing this because they've tried again to try to change laws that disproportionately impact different groups in our state. And I think that increasing the penalties is in some weird way thought to be a deterrent to make sure this doesn't happen. And really it's not a deterrent. It's something that's just meant to penalize people even more. But I would assume that protests will continue and that individuals will be arrested if we move forward with this. And I don't think it's the author's intent to have more people arrested, to have more people put in jail as a result of these activities. I actually think that, you know, the author's intent is to stop people from doing this. And I think the way that we stop people from doing this is we actually address the underlying causes and concerns for quality of life of individuals in the state. So I would ask that people support this amendment. I think it's a great amendment, and we can move forward and not have to worry about the governor vetoing another bill.
Representative Zerwine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dean, I respect, you know, I respect where you're coming from, and I get what you're saying. And my goal truly is deterrence. And the bill, the larger bill here, is full of increased criminal penalties in hopes of deterrence. Representative Ward has a provision within the bill where it increases criminal penalties on prostitution in an attempt to deter it. And so I think that concept is not somehow brand new or untested. It exists in this bill from provisions in this bill offered by DFL members. So I think we need to just accept that the idea that increasing criminal penalties as an attempt to deter criminal behavior is a process this legislature has historically and presently engages in a bipartisan approach. My goal is to get people not to block freeways, not to block access to airports, and not to shut down the billion-dollar train system. I think this bill will help do that. I 100% agree with you that the First Amendment allows for people to protest and ask for redress on their government. It does not, however, afford you the right to park your Buick across three lanes of I-94. If you believe it does, you have been misinformed. There is nothing that is currently legal in the state of Minnesota that this language would make illegal. It takes current criminal activity and it increases the penalty on it, which, as I said, is a bipartisan approach in this bill and in bills passed to try to crack down on criminal behavior.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zerwas, as you know, I'm a prosecutor of gender violence, especially sexual exploitation, done training on for law enforcement, others, and prostitution, sex trafficking, and I worked closely with Representative Ward on the language that you cited about prostitution, which, as you note, in the bill, it increases the penalty for a second-time offense of buying sex from somebody else to a felony. And Representative Zerwas, while it's true that certainly the hope is that over time there may be those who buy sex may well be dissuaded, there may be some deterrence. In the first instance, that is not the goal. Certainly it was not my goal in pushing that. Criminal penalties are a statement by society as to what society thinks about certain behavior. Right? We say that something is a crime because we think it's not only bad behavior, because certain bad behavior is not criminal, but we believe that it's so bad that it's actually a violation of society's norms that we want to punish as a crime. And then we decide what penalty to assign. And Mr. Zerwas, I would suggest to you and your colleagues as well that deterrence is really not necessarily at the top of that list when we're thinking about it. The men who are going out and buying sex certainly early on, if this does pass, they're not going to be consulting the statute books. They're going to find out, wow, the second time, guess what, it's a felony. Certainly word is going to end up spreading. But well, that is a statement that we are making that is saying that buying a human being is an offensive act that is worthy of increased penalties, and so the second time certainly being a felony. But by contrast, right, as I've said this before, if you assault your spouse, your girlfriend, you can beat that person up pretty badly and have it still be a misdemeanor. What your amendment does, what your language in the bill that we're trying to take out now does, is say that the act of blocking access to a transit vehicle is more offensive to society than that act of assaulting your partner. Representative Zerwas, I guess I would suggest to you that deterrence is really not the issue here. People are not going to be consulting statute books. I agree with my colleagues. What this is us deciding where do criminal penalties fall and how we assess things. And I would suggest to you, we have all these other areas that we say are misdemeanors. We now are picking this out, and it is hard to see any reason to pick it out other than that we are going after the First Amendment activities of those who are engaging it. I understand what you say. It has to do with behavior, and we have the behavior already criminal. But the issue is that when you crank the penalties up, you're making a statement about what you think and what we think about the behavior itself. It's a statement that is the kind of speech conduct in a way that works that way. So, listen, we have it be criminal, it already is criminal, that's fine. But by cranking up the penalties in this one little area, what you're doing is you're making a statement about why that behavior happens. And that, Representative Zerwas, I would suggest to you, is not an appropriate thing for us to do. I am proud to stand with my colleagues. We should absolutely approve this amendment and get this language out of the bill and certainly out of our law. Thank you.
Representative Zerwas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. And understand that we do, as a society, believe that there is an inherent risk, an inherent severity in blocking a freeway and closing down an airport or locking arm in arm through PVC pipe and shutting down the mass transit system. It is inherently dangerous to block a freeway. It is inherently dangerous to stand in the middle, to park your vehicle sideways on the freeway. And because of the societal impact of those actions, we believe, and the House of Representatives has passed this in the past, we believe that there is an inherent need to increase the criminal penalties. We're looking at millions of dollars over the last several years expended by the State Patrol, by the City of Minneapolis, by the City of St. Paul, and the City of Bloomington just in response to these protests. We have multiple police officers that have been injured in responding to these freeway blockades, including, as you're well aware, a University of Minnesota police officer who had a cinder block dropped on his head and fractured a vertebrae in his neck. Yes. Yes, we believe this is serious enough to bring it from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not going to tell the whole story about my daughter again, but I am going to say that if you would have sat there in the car and looked at my daughter's face when she got in the car after trying to get through that airport, there is no reason in the world to terrorize a young lady like that. And in that respect, if you would have looked into her eyes on that day, you would have thought that the penalty increase would have been right also. So I am in all favor of this because I tell you what, your First Amendment right does not have it doesn't give you the right to terrorize another person. And that's exactly what happened that day. She was shaken. She was crying. Nobody has the right to do that to another person. And that's what that group of people did. So, yes, I think we need to increase it. Because if you would have been in the car when my daughter got in the car, I couldn't believe it. No reason to do that.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I want to ask Representative Zerwas, on line 47.22, the restricting passenger access to the transit vehicle. I mean, I ride transit all the time, and it is I don't want to have my access blocked. And again, that would be criminal. I guess I'm just trying to understand why that is. That particular piece is so much worse than again an assault on a spouse. That particular just to zero in on that particular piece.
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Pinto, if you have a specific bill that you'd be interested in bringing to increase the criminal penalties for spousal abuse, bring it to me and I will sign on. If we're too lenient in one area, let's get going, let's ratchet it up. You're a prosecutor, you're very familiar with these types of domestic assault cases. If it's your thought as a prosecutor that we need to increase those criminal penalties, I am all in. I will raise holy hell to get a target where we can afford a fiscal note to do that. Count me in 100%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that was responsive. I'd like to get a response to my original question. I'll just note a reminder that as we increase penalties in one area, if we were to increase penalties in that area, then that means that when somebody causes substantial bodily harm, instead of it being a level 4 felony, 5 years and $10,000 fine, well, we're going to have to increase that as well. We're going to keep on increasing penalties all the way up, because otherwise, then you're devaluing when increased harm is caused. It's an entire framework of penalties is the idea here. And so picking any one thing, that's true, we could increase that one thing, but now we're devaluing the next level up, so we better increase that too. And, boy, you're going to have quite a target if we're going to be increasing all those penalties all the way up the chain. But I guess I do just want to ask, restricting passenger access to the transit vehicle, that seems to you to be a gross misdemeanor level crime. If you can just explain why that is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Understand that in current statute, restricting passenger access to a transit vehicle is already a felony if it's done with force or violence. And so going from misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor, it doesn't seem out of the norm. It seems right in line with the fact that you can already be charged with that and have it be a felony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just conclude just noting that we have, as I said before, we have a framework of penalties that are established for a reason, and we want to be really thoughtful about what we're doing in each of those pieces. I would say that when there's force or violence involved, that is a really significant difference than when there's not. I remain opposed to the language, and I'm grateful to Representative Becker Finn for bringing the amendment forward, and I'm supportive of it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, and Mr. Chair, just put it briefly. If you march out on the freeway or you pull your vehicle perpendicular on I-94, the only reason there's not force or violence involved is because you're counting on 17 other cars having really good brakes. That's what you're counting on. You're counting on every moving motorist at 75 miles an hour and semi-trucks and school buses and ambulances. There's no force or violence because you're counting on them to stop. We have seen instances where people are getting hurt. This is a health safety issue. We need to prevent people from blockading the freeways, the transit operation, and the airports.
Yeah, people are getting shot
by cops and built races. Please be quiet. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to slow us down a little bit because I think the reason this original bill came forward was because of the protests on I-94. And that was because of what happened to Philando Castile. And so when we talk about how dangerous that is, I mean, I know you love the visual of the Buick across 94. But when we think about what compels a person to put themselves in danger, we need to think about why that is. Because people feel really strongly that their government and the people in power are not hearing them and reacting appropriately to some of the things that are happening in our communities. And so if we're going to talk about the compassion we feel thinking of someone's daughter in the backseat of a car, I hope that we can also remember the little girl in the backseat of Philando Castile's car and how painful and traumatic that entire experience was. And that pain and that experience and seeing that video and seeing that happened, that's what compels people to be willing to put themselves in harm's way. You know, just like, you know, we just memorialized Dr. King in the last couple weeks again. And I think it's just we need to think about what compels people to come forward and put themselves in harm's way. Because it isn't to annoy you or scare you or, you know, if we're going to talk about intent, that's not what people are trying to do. They're trying to get us to pay attention. And increasing the penalties, I think, is not a helpful reaction in paying attention to that pain that communities are suffering.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Zerwas, for going down this path and having the fortitude to take the stand that you have. I don't agree with pulling out this language. Members, I have been very quiet on this issue. I really could have said a lot last year, but I did not. I thought that the issue had been properly vetted. But let me give you a perspective here from a paramedic's point of view. All of you know I've done this for 30 years full-time, and folks in the audience might not. I work for an ambulance service that covers about half of Hennepin County, and we do 70,000 calls a year. To say we're busy is an understatement. And when there is a critical road or a critical highway that's being blocked, sometimes we hear about it. Sometimes we don't, because we're on the road when it happens. And when we have to reroute ourselves along with all of the other traffic to get around whatever this point of obstruction is in order to get to a hospital, why don't you come into the back of my ambulance for just a minute. I'm going to paint the mental picture for you, what that looks like. First of all, you're the driver, and you're trying to navigate and find a quick path to a level one trauma center, and you're trying to get in and around all of the cars that are not moving, and nobody knows where to go because there aren't proper exit lanes. You're trying to navigate through a morass, a mess. Now, picture the person that's in the back. We've got a saying in EMS, it's called time is brain. If you're suffering from a stroke, you got about 6 minutes without oxygen before you have irreparable brain damage. And I don't know if any of you have ever had the experience of trying to keep someone alive in the back of an ambulance when they're stroking, full-blown seizures, vomiting, out of control, dying. And now you've got to reroute around something like this. How about a myocardial infarction, which is a fancy word for a heart attack? You know what? We've made some amazing steps forward in medical technology. But suffice to say, if you're having a massive heart attack, getting you or your loved one to a cath lab is the only thing that matters, because it's the only thing that's going to save your life. And if you're stuck on a road because some people are angry and they're protesting, regardless of the issue, how does that bode for the person in the back who's hooked up to what we call a Lucas machine? It looks like an automatic plunger. You stick it on their chest, and it's very violent, but it keeps people alive. It'll keep people alive for hours. But if you shut that machine off, they die. And they're going to die unless you get them to the cath lab. How about pregnancies? You ever heard of a prolapsed cord? I've had two in my career. You show up, and the only thing that's presenting is a cord. And you have to take your gloved hand and insert it into the birth canal, and you have to push that baby's head off of the cord so that kid doesn't die. And now you got to sit there in the back of the ambulance with all that pressure from the contractions pushing against your arm, and you've got to keep that head off that cord, and you have got to sit there all the way down to the hospital to keep that baby alive until you, literally, you're doing this to get into the surgery. And you get into surgery, and they throw a blanket over your head, and they do a C-section on that woman to save that kid's life. You're telling me this protest is more important? How about asthma patients? Asthma patients are some of the worst cases you can handle if you go into a complete shutdown. They can't exhale their air. You literally have to straddle on top of them. You grab the sides of their chests. You give them a breath. One person gives them a breath of air while you have to literally force, with all of your strength, force them to exhale because they can't. And if you don't get them to a hospital, they are going to die. We have enough delays and we have enough problems. Blocking freeways and putting these people and putting our EMS system in greater jeopardy, it's not the way to do it. Thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of thoughts on this that I want to share. First of all, behavior is a reflection of something else going on. If you even think of small children acting out, we've had lots of discussions in education committees about how to deal with behavior problems. And what we know works best is to deal with the underlying issue. Kids don't strike out or misbehave because they just want to be bad. There's something else going on. And if we deal with the underlying issue, the behavior is resolved. So my son was a paramedic, and I'm familiar with what you're saying. Representative Newberg, I appreciate your work because it is life-saving. One of the things that I have never heard, but I have thought all along when we were having these protests, is that that was the time when the Capitol was closed, the Capitol complex was closed, and there was no public place large enough for anybody to gather and have protests or rallies. I'm noticing Representative Zerwas shaking his head, agreeing with me on that. There was no place for people to express their outrage, their frustration, and you know, it's like any other behavior, it's going to come out some way. Very strong feelings that have been suppressed for a long time but have a reason for coming out, and there was no place for these people to go. The Capitol is open now. We have a large campus. We have a large venue for people to gather in rallies or protests. And I really think that this, blocking of highways and the airport issue and that sort of thing wouldn't happen again because we have a place for people to gather. And so as we've heard over these last couple of years, these arguments about blocking highways and blocking the airport, I'm thinking it's not, it hadn't happened before, you know, to anywhere near that kind of an issue. I don't believe it would again because people have an alternative place. So I think we're spending a great deal of time and energy and emotion on something that is not really going to be an issue. And I also want to reiterate or repeat or reinforce what Representative Pinto was saying about somehow equating the violation, the purchasing of a human being, and those human beings being trafficked in ways that we can't even comprehend, and equating that with people and penalizing the behavior that continues putting people in a position of being imprisoned with people expressing their frustration and anger with the inequities that our policies have allowed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ugo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief in view of the hour here, and we've got a lot more to do. You know, I can't help but be struck by the way that these protests have evolved. And when you look at the way it was in the beginning of protests in this country with Martin Luther King and the Freedom Riders and the lunch sit-in counter-protests in Selma and things like that, these things have morphed, and we have a lot more violent protest in this country than we had in the past. I have absolutely nothing against peaceful protest, and I think it's an integral part of America. And you're right. I mean, we started this with a Tea Party with a Tea Party in Boston Harbor, but nonetheless, you know, we are a society based on laws, and we have to protect our people. Representative Neuberger, you're so right. I mean, other people are being the possibilities are horrible. So this bill does not restrict our right of protest. It's something that if you're going to protest, do it right. But let's not be violent about it. Let's not block freeways and public transit at airports and everything else. And Representative Ward, you're right. I you know, protests here at the Capitol, I actually like them. I really do. And I think it's a wonderful venue and a good place to exchange ideas. But a freeway is not the place to do that. And violence is not the way to go. And if we have to increase penalties, I think we need to do that to protect the public. Thank you.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess just to respond to what Representative Uglem just said about doing it right. Like, I think it sounds like doing protest right to you is whichever way is not inconvenient for you.
I didn't say that.
And so I think the point of protest is that it is disruptive so that people pay attention. And as a society, we accept traffic delays. We accept spending hundreds of millions of dollars on police time for marathons and hockey games and the Super Bowl. But what this bill says to me is that we won't accept those delays and those extra dollars spent for desperate communities that are begging us to pay attention and do something. And I don't think that's right. And I, you know, I'm not to diminish anything that Representative Neuberger shared with us, but as a paramedic, I'm guessing you don't take the bus. And so this bill does more than just the freeways and the quickest way to a hospital. This the current language that we're trying to take out also applies to transit, to buses and trains, and I don't think that really has the impact on our paramedics and our first responders being able to do their work. So we accept delays all the time with traffic. We're forced to here in Minnesota for the weather for all kinds of reasons. But, you know, I don't see us legislating to, you know, not use police dollars and not to allow, you know, sporting events to disrupt our time and to disrupt our ability to get places. So, I mean, that's just that's the values that are reflected in aiming this language at particular types of activity.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you.
And with that, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment does not prevail. Next, we have the A12 amendment. Representative Zerwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I have two amendments coming up here, and I'll try to be quicker than the last one. The A12 amendment is the Alternatives to Juvenile Detention grant. I remain committed to finding alternatives to connecting young people involved with the criminal justice system and finding ways to keep them out of the court system. Our hope is, as the JDAI looks at approaching their sunset, that we're able to find funding for their program to continue. I've been in conversations with the chair and with the committee administrator, and hoping that we can find through the rest of the process before session ends a way to fund this program, maybe not to the million and a half level, but at some level. Unfortunately, we're not there yet, but we're going to keep working on this. I know Representative Dean and I have been working on these issues together for several years now. Before I pull the amendment, I want Representative Dean to help address the issue briefly or two.
Representative Dean?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Zerwas. You know, this is a program that has done amazing things with our juveniles in the state when they find themselves in trouble. In the past, we were quick to lock kids up, and ultimately we know that when you lock kids up, that sometimes the result is not always a positive thing. This is a program that was instituted over a decade ago, and the amount of kids that we have in juvenile detention in the counties that this is in place have been reduced drastically. And that includes the original counties of Hennepin and Ramsey, including St. Louis and Dakota. And now it's going statewide. And they've recently began to have programs and work with counties in the northern part of the state of Minnesota. And we're actually seeing the reduction, like, within a year in the number of kids that are being taken to detention centers versus alternatives to that. This is a program that, for some reason, the sunset happens in a weird year. Usually sunsets happen in budget years, and so that it's not an issue because you can address it during the budget year. But this is a really critical program that is doing great work. And this isn't just a Minnesota program. I mean, this is a program that's happening all across the country and seeing really good results in really putting young people on a path that they're not going into the criminal justice system. I mean, we've, you know, we keep talking about the increase of individuals in our prisons and in lockup, and, you know, one of the, you know, the best thing is to, when someone gets out, is try to make sure that they don't go back through programs that reduce recidivism. Even better is to make sure they don't go there in the first place. And that's what this program does. And, you know, I know that the plan is to maybe set this aside today and come back to it. But, you know, I don't know if the committee would be amenable to even, you know, putting $100,000 towards this. And, you know, my understanding is there are some areas within the DOC, within MNCOR, that could actually help to keep this program going, because once it goes away, it's going to take a lot more money to reinstate it again than it would to maintain it. And if we can get this into conference committee, I think we can find the resources necessary to continue the program. So, Mr. Chair, I would just ask that the committee possibly consider, you know, reducing the $1.5 million request to even $100,000, and that we allocate the money, or request that MNCOR allocate that money for use of this program.
Representative Zerwaj?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dean, I completely agree. And so I've been working with committee staff and the chairman. I'm hopeful that we'll have some options. I would love something as some type of foothold going into to conference with this. The sunset on this program not being on the budget year of the biennium is baffling to me, because what we're doing is we're setting this program up to shut down, really, as it continues to show unbelievable results. And like you mentioned, not just in the metro area, but also in greater Minnesota. And so my commitment to you and the advocates is to continue to work with the committee staff and the committee chair in hopes of either in ways and means or on the floor finding a way to get a position for JDAI within the bill as it heads to conference. And with that, Mr. Chair, unfortunately today, and just for today, I'll withdraw the A-12 amendment.
Okay, with that, the A-12 amendment is withdrawn. Next, we have the A-13 amendment. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really didn't think this was going to be that difficult. It was a language change to make the language consistent throughout the fourth degree assault, where in most of it says bodily fluids. There's one area in which it lists the bodily fluids. It doesn't include spitting. This is an effort to make custody staff, the security counselors at the security hospital, and police officers to be able to charge when somebody is exposing them to communicable diseases such as influenza, tuberculosis, hepatitis, things that are transmittable by spitting. Tuberculosis, influenza have killed more people than AIDS in the last century. I am somewhat dismayed to see that later on there's another amendment that does exactly the opposite. I see there's not a name on it, but I am at a loss to understand why somebody would want to expose people to those kind of diseases. I would ask for your support to try to make people accountable when they try to expose our frontline staff to those kind of horrible diseases. Any questions about that?
Any questions by members? Okay. Representative Constantine, I overall agree with you 100%. That's why your bill that dealing with this is on the general register. I will be talking with leadership as well and see if we can get a vote on that bill.
And what would be the objection to just adding it into the omnibus now so that it's done and they can be prosecuted when they spit in somebody's face and they have tuberculosis? I actually do have personal experience with this. Every jail in Minnesota is now required to do TB tests, and that came from the Blue Earth County Jail. I knew the inmate. He coughed all over me. I mean, I looked at him and went, I guess I shouldn't use his name, but I said, looks like you've had that cold for about 3 months. And it turned out, no, it wasn't a cold. He had tuberculosis. A little bit further into the story, my grandfather died of tuberculosis. He was gassed in World War I and came back with his lungs shot. I can't understand any kind of a delay in pushing this forward. So, I'm guessing that most of the law enforcement and custody officers and security councils are not going to understand why we wouldn't push this forward either.
Well, like I said, it's on the general register, and I will, like, as I said, I will also go up to leadership corner and do what I can to get a vote on it, because that's something I would like to be as a standalone. Also, with you referenced another amendment, and Representative Grass will explain that reason during his amendment.
You're kidding. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, you're kidding.
Unfortunately, I'm not. Any other questions or comments on this amendment? Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a reason that this isn't, what is the reason to not include it in the omnibus bill if you're supportive of it, Mr. Chair?
Representative Pinto, because I want to do it as a standalone. Because I think it's that important, it should be a standalone. Representative Dean?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would assume that the bill that we just spent, the A-10 amendment, spent over half an hour discussing should be a standalone, too. But, you know, we do things for reasons, and, you know, we don't need to have a half an hour discussion about this amendment. I think this is an easy solution, and I don't know what the controversy is, and maybe when we hear the next amendment later, we'll understand the controversy, but it seems to be a real simple thing, and, you know, sometimes things in this committee aren't simple, which I totally understand, and sometimes they are, and I just feel that this is one of those simple times. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillsford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The rule of thumb is to put your bill in as many places as you can. So it's not unheard of to have it sitting on the general register and also be put in the omnibus bill. So I would encourage members to put it in the bill.
Representative Grassl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the A23 amendment, in working with our stakeholders, we tried to address as many concerns as we could. And one of the concerns that NAMI brought forward were people being charged for spitting when they're having to be sometimes assisted with taking their medications and spitting their pills back out. So in order to try to address one of those concerns with one of the stakeholders to make the bill bring them some peace as well, that is why I have the A23 amendment.
Representative Pasternak?
I'm sorry. I'm in one's. I'm sorry. I don't understand that reasoning, to be quite honest. Somebody spitting their pills, they're afraid they're going to get charged when every other facet of the bill they're okay with. Again, I'm not aware of a single incident where that has ever even been approached. And again, the amendment changes the entire assault bill. It doesn't change just that particular part. That is not consistent. So,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we haven't voted yet on the A13 amendment, and I think this is important, and I think the folks that are here would like to know who's in favor of making a security treatment facility personnel not be spit on. So I'm going to ask for a roll call on the A13 amendment.
Anyone else? Okay, there is a request for a roll call on the amendment. The A13 amendment. And with that, we'll take the roll.
Johnson.
No.
Lohmer.
Yes.
Hillstrom.
Yes.
Becker Finn.
Yes.
Considine.
Yes.
Dean.
Yes.
Frankie.
Yes.
Grossel.
Yes.
Howe.
Yes.
Lucero.
Yes.
Neuberger.
Yes.
O'Neill.
Yes.
Pinto.
Yes.
Uglum.
Yep.
Ward.
Yes.
Zerwas.
Yep.
The amendment has passed.
Thank you.
Feeling better.
Representative, let's see, next we have House File A16. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. The A16 amendment is the reporting portion of the administrative and disciplinary segregation bill that was, the broader bill was included in our omnibus last year. Members, this requires the commissioner to report the number of inmates in each institution placed in segregation, the ages of the inmates, the number of inmates transferred from segregation to a mental health unit treatment, the nature of the infraction leading to the use of segregation, the length of terms served in segregation, including terms served consecutively, any incidents of inmates not receiving at least 5 hours a week out of a cell, and then based on Representative Hillstrom's recommendation the other day on line 1.18 and 1.19, the number of inmates convicted of assault while confined and the number of this group of inmates who received consecutive sentences as required under Section 609.2232. We had the Commissioner of Corrections with the committee yesterday to offer testimony, and I asked him on the record if the bulk of this information was already being collected. He indicated that it was. This was in the bill last year with no fiscal impact reported by the department. We've all seen the reports in the paper, and we've heard concerns about the use of administrative segregation, and certainly we've heard reports of assaults on staff more recently. And so I think it's important that this committee wrap our arms around that issue. And I think having the commissioner provide us with the information that they're already collecting would be very helpful. So I ask for a yes vote.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would encourage members to support it.
Any other comments or questions on this bill amendment? All those in favor of the A16 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A19 amendment. This is the author's amendment. There's a on this amendment, there's a couple technical changes, also changes that in Representative Crescia's bill to that the stakeholders have agreed to. Also in the task force for Native and Indigenous people, I've added the Minnesota Sheriff's Office, Sheriff's Association as a member to that. I believe they were inadvertently left off. With that, are there any questions to the amendment? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, in committee, I raised the issue with the new court-appointed language for the guardians, or not the guardians, but the pro bono lawyers having to be qualified. And Representative Crescia thought that they didn't need to be, but in fact, under the statute, they do need to be. And so this is deleting that language. And members, I'm fine with there being pro bono lawyers appointed if they're qualified. So between now and the next committee, Mr. Chair, I'm hoping we can talk about that language and see if we can't get it to everyone's satisfaction.
That would be great. Anybody else on this amendment? All in favor of the A19 amendment, the signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is approved. Next, we have the A21 amendment. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. As we're trying to address a lot of these issues relative to folks incarcerated, what the A21 amendment does is appropriates $320,000 for fiscal year 2019 from the Driver Services Fund to put forward a project called the Unprisoned Projects, or Mama's Bus Pilot Project. And the intent of this program is to bring the children of women that are locked up in Shakopee and engage those children and those mothers in programming that not only helps with the mother-child bond, but also helps the child to be successful in school, and in in an odd way, also helps the mother then to possibly become more successful during the time in which she is locked up. And this is specifically, this particular amendment is specifically for a program that would happen at Shakopee. And I have another amendment that will look more system-wide to appropriate the money to happen. So I'm requesting that we appropriate from the Driver Service Fund $320,000 in 2019 to fund this program. And I would be happy to answer any questions that folks have.
Representative Dean?
Yes.
Are you aware that that fund is controlled by the Transportation and not by the Public Safety Committee?
I certainly understand it's not controlled, but this is a project that involves transportation, and I believe it's critical that we look for areas of money that need to be addressed, and I'm more than happy to go and speak to the Transportation Committee at some point, but I think that since this is dealing with issues directly to public safety, that we take this up in the committee and include it as part of our bill. And we've already done it recently with the ignition interlock system in this bill, so we're not going too far out of bounds from what we've already done.
That is, Representative Dean, that is true that we have worked with the Department of Committee on Transportation, but that was taken care of beforehand. They have their target as well. I'm just afraid that this would put that committee out of balance. I don't want to do that.
Mr. Chair, transportation got over $100 million. We got seven. So
and, that $101 million that they have is to fix our roads and our infrastructure, roads and bridges, which are dire need of help. And like I said, I don't want to put their budget out of balance. They're working on their bill as well today. I believe this amendment should have been in their committee and not in our committee, as that's where the funding has to come from. I am going to ask that you withdraw it, so I do not have to call it out of order, but that's going to be up to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. Do you know if transportation has met on their omnibus bill yet?
I have no idea, but the funding is out of their committee. That's something you should have checked on.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Lucero.
As a member of the Transportation Finance Committee, the omnibus bill was introduced yesterday, but we have not met to consider amendments yet.
Mr. Chair, in light of what I sense is a protocol of the chair not being willing to dip into another committee's budget to fund a program that's really, really critical, because I think this is a very, very critical, I'll withdraw it at this time, and I'll work with Representative Lucero if he's willing to work with me, and we'll try to get this into the transportation budget.
That sounds great. And with that, the Amendment A21 is withdrawn. We now have the A22.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a feeling that we're going to go down the same route with this amendment, but I want to speak to this amendment. Peace of Hope Transit Rides have been providing services to families primarily in the metro area, but it takes individuals to visit individuals that are locked up, whether they're in close proximity or whether they're far away. And the program has been operating under donations in a federal grant, and that federal grant is not being renewed at this time. So they are also in need of funding to continue this program. You know, I want to stress that the number one indicator of an inmate not recidivating or not reoffending is visitation. You can look at the chart. Those inmates that don't have visitors are much more likely to reoffend than those that do have visitors. So this is a critical program, not just for those families. It's also a critical program for public safety, and it's a critical program for our budgeting, because the less people we have reoffending, the less need we're going to have to fund corrections. So this was an appropriation for $640,000 over a two-year period. Ideally, the funding would be $640,000 for 1 year, but we understand that the amount of resources that are made available to fund programs like this is not available. And I see that Representative Lucero has stepped out. But in light of what happened in the previous bill, I would be willing to withdraw at this time and try to move this forward into the transportation bill. But before I do that, I just want to open this up to questions if any other members on the committee have questions about what we're trying to do here. Wow.
Representative Pinto.
Maybe this is just as much of a comment that, like, this is incredibly cost-effective work. To Representative Dean's point, Mr. Chair, and members of the reduction of recidivism from visitors, and especially family visitors, I mean, this is such powerful work, so I'm grateful to Representative Dean for bringing it forward, and I just want to make sure to, we talk a lot about cranking up penalties and various and adjusting and thinking that may adjust behavior. We've had discussions about that.
One thing that really adjusts behavior for people who are in prison is just getting visited by their family members. It's that basic. And we know there's a huge connection between poverty and many of the folks who are in prison have families who are experiencing poverty, experiencing other challenges. And so they have a real challenge visiting their family members. So many thanks to you, Representative Dean, for bringing this forward.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dean, why is there a difference between the one that the A21 and the A22? Aren't the people on the Mama's Bus family? Why couldn't they be one program? Why are we after funding for two programs? Why couldn't we consolidate them, do one program and do, because they're all family, if I'm not, and it would, I guess I'm struggling with why we're trying to fund two programs and not incorporate them into one program, do one.
Sure. Representative Dean?
Mr. Chair and Representative Howe, the one that's dealing with mothers in Shakopee is a pretty focused program, and currently Peace of Hope has been providing the services statewide and all the other institutions. So instead of saying we're going to incorporate all of this into one, and have duplicate services, the decision was made to actually sort of have the one focus on Shakopee with the mothers, with the education program, with the kids, and the Peace of Hope Transit is to allow other individuals to have opportunities to go to other institutions, our lockup facilities throughout the state. So that's why we separated it, because they are different. They do serve different purposes, and we want to make sure that we are appropriating the money in the way that it would have the greatest impact. With that, and no more questions, Mr. Chair, I'll try to work with Representative Lucero to see if we can't get these amendments onto the transportation bill. And with that, I will withdraw A22 at this time.
Well, thank you, Representative Dean, and they both are good programs. The A23, Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I talked a little bit about it already, and I think I'm going to, at this time, withdraw the A23.
Okay. Thank you. A23 is run. Next, we have the A25. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually offering this on behalf of Representative Knobloch, who's a de facto member of the committee but cannot offer an amendment. And it still has some issues, and so we're going to withdraw it at this time.
A23 is withdrawn. Okay. Now we will act on the overall DE2 amendment. Is there any questions on the DE2?
As amended.
As amended? Okay. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess no questions, but a comment before we vote, if now's the time for that. Mr. Chair, members, there are a number of concerns that I have with the bill, some of which have been addressed in amendments and in discussions. But the major omission that I want to make sure to highlight for members and for the community and for the state as a whole is the inaction on the part of the Public Safety and Security Committee to do more to keep firearms out of the hands of dangerous people, and therefore to keep Minnesotans more safe and secure. There are two bills, as members know, that are sitting on the table right now. One of them would require that the same background checks that are that apply to most sales of firearms simply apply to all sales of firearms. The other bill would have a court order that law enforcement or family members could get when somebody's shown that they're a substantial danger to themselves or to others. Both of these are provisions that are currently in use in other states. Both have bipartisan support, broad support from a great majority of Minnesotans, of Republicans, of gun owners. And when our state experiences and our country experiences the level of deaths from firearms, from all sources, homicide, suicide, and accident for that matter as well. Minnesotans know that we need to take action. And our failure to do so is, in my view, shameful. And it is unfortunate that as we have the bill sitting in front of us, we have sitting essentially right on the shelf these two provisions that are ready to go. I've continually offered, and I must say, past today, I'm eager to work with anyone to get these bills passed, to do more, to keep Minnesotans safe, and to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people. And our failure to do so in this bill is deeply, deeply disappointing. There are many, many good aspects of the bill. I should note, Representative Zerwas mentioned the increase in holding more offenders accountable who are purchasing sex and using human beings in that just awful, awful exploitative way. There are many other aspects as well. But it's important to me to lift up and to highlight the disappointment on the failure to act on gun violence. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, as you know, the governor had a budget proposal, and many of the items that the governor requested were not included in this bill, and I know that your target would not allow for the governor's pieces to be in the bill in their entirety. I'm hopeful that between now and the time that this bill comes back from a conference committee, that we, in fact, take care of the needed more than 100 guards in the Department of Corrections, that we take care of the health care costs that they so rightly, constitutionally need to have provided health care to inmates, and that we take care of the issues that the BCA has addressed with scientists and their caseload numbers. And, Mr. Chair, as always, we talk about the public defenders and their great need, and this bill increases the number of cases and the types that they're going to see. And so every time we enhance a penalty, every time we increased the number of folks that are facing prison, we also increase the caseloads for whether it's public defenders or guardian ad litem or the courts. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm hopeful that between now and the time this bill comes back from conference, that more of the governor's recommendations will be incorporated in this bill.
Thank you. First of all, let's vote on the adopted DE2 amendment as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. I need I also do a motion to authorize the revisers and nonpartisan House Research and Fiscal to make any technical corrections that are necessary in the bill before it is engrossed for Ways and Means. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? With that, I will renew my motion that House file 2856 be referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. Yours has passed. And we will adjourn.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, is this the last meeting of this committee this session?
I am hopefully this is the last meeting. I'll let you have some last words if you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank the members of this committee. It has been an honor to serve with you over the last biennium. I know we had a chair change, and Mr. Chair, welcome to the position of the chair, and I look forward to our continued work in a bipartisan way between now and the end of session.
Representative Hillstrom, it's been a pleasure working with you this year. A little bit of changes this year. It was an unfortunate situation, but like always, you've been very good to work with, and I want to thank all the staff, whether it's partisan or nonpartisan staff, for your hard work. And with that, we will.